You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Janae Pierre, in for Melissa Harris-Perry. What if we lived in a world where students writing essays became obsolete? That's the question facing instructors around the world amid the fast rise of ChatGPT.
ChatGPT fundamentally is a piece of software, but it's a piece of software that's unlike what we've seen before. It interacts with people in a conversational way. It writes poems, sonnets, essays, term papers, even programming code. And it's a convincing debate partner in an unlimited number of subjects. My name is Susan D'Agostino, and I'm the technology and innovation reporter at Inside Higher Ed.
The writing ability of ChatGPT is uncharted territory for many educators. Recently, the AI software was able to pass law exams in classes at the University of Minnesota, where instructors graded submissions from ChatGPT and human law students blindly. ChatGPT was able to perform at the average of a C+ law student. And this may just be the beginning of a whole new AI-assisted education future. Google is reportedly getting ready to launch a rival platform to ChatGPT. So, should educators be fearful of this new dawn of AI-assisted classwork? Citing concerns around cheating and plagiarism, some school districts, including New York City's public schools, have banned the software. But when Susan sat down with Melissa Harris-Perry, she said that education's relationship with AI-powered technology like ChatGPT is a lot more complicated.
There's a mix right now of some fear, but it's also coupled with uncertainty and certainly also excitement. It can produce plausible college-level essays, and they earn passing grades and receive feedback on par with those that are written by humans. But I would say that there's also some excitement. So it's not only about fear at this point.
Okay. It can write a passing essay. How do we know it can write a passing essay? Did it take a test?
So right now, the software is being offered free by OpenAI. People are going online and saying, hey, can you write an essay about this topic? And it actually, produces original prose. So it's not necessarily plagiarizing from anywhere. It's going out onto the internet, getting information, putting it together, and producing the requested results. So whether that's an essay or a term paper or, a short paragraph. And, there have been faculty who have looked at these papers and have had trouble distinguishing between those that the machine wrote or those that their students would write. And I've even spoken with faculty who have said it writes as well as I do.
It is not plagiarizing. That is fascinating. I mean, the number of times I've needed to, at the start of a semester, engage with my students around the question of what constitutes plagiarism, what is fair use, how to cite sources. I guess I'm wondering, how would we characterize what it means to ask an AI software to help you with your paper?
You're hitting on the question that faculty are reckoning with right now. There's a really vast gray area between acceptable and unacceptable uses of this evolving tech. We've all been using some version of artificial, or many of us have been using some version of artificial intelligence suggestions when we have used spell check and grammar check, or those little suggestions for replies in our emails, like, hey, thanks so much, got the document. Most people would say that's fine to use spell check or grammar check. And most people on the other end would say it's not okay to, ask ChatGPT to produce an entire essay and then submit it wholesale for credit without acknowledging that contribution. But in between, there's some kind of collaboration that potentially can happen now between humans and machines. And, faculty are trying to figure out how to guide their students in how to do this.
As much as I'd love to believe that the world were, and obviously you write for Inside Higher Ed, our worlds, revolve around what is happening in college classrooms in so many ways. But I guess even beyond that, there is this broader question to me of sort of Is it just a matter of citing ChatGPT, of indicating that there is another intellectual producer here?
Yeah, so many faculty are asking their students to acknowledge the contribution of ChatGPT in the event that they used it. You know, some are using it more, not necessarily in assessments, in what, you know, what we all know as tests or exams, but some are using it, you know, to spark creativity. Maybe there are some students who, for whom, you know, writing is a struggle and who face a blank page with fear or dread. And, you know, in those cases, some faculty are saying, hey, this can, you know, kind of start the process, the writing process for you. And with that little nudge, then maybe the student is, you know, off to the races. It's not just about citing that you used ChatGPT, but there also is often the question of how much, you know, how much did ChatGPT contribute? So it's typically citing, but also explaining, you know, the extent to which it was used.
Such an interesting point. I suffer from enough writer's block to understand the dramatic difference between having a starting point versus, you know, facing that blank page. That blank page, whew, is brutal. Will it change what we think of as competence, as intellect? Sort of not today or tomorrow, but in 10 years, will the capacity to build on this kind of technology, this kind of AI, be the thing that we are most looking for in a classroom and potentially in professional settings? Or will there still be some value for those who can face the blank page and come up with that nugget, that kernel, completely by themselves?
Melissa, you're getting to the heart of this, that this is not just about, you know, is a student cheating or is a student not cheating? This is very much about our humanness. And faculty are in a position right now to help steer this uncertain path that we're facing. You know, I've spoken with some who, you know, who firmly believe that, you know, they should be crafting assignments for their students that guide students in surpassing the AI. And in order to do that, some are saying that, okay, start with the AI, what ChatGPT or other AI writing tools give you, and stand on its shoulders, you know, go farther than it. There's another contingent of faculty who are saying, that's a fool's errand. Don't do that. Don't have your students start with the AI. That lends far too much agency to the software. It imbues it with human attributes that, you know, they reject. You know, they say it doesn't have that. The problem I'm seeing when I talk with many faculty, and I've been talking with many at colleges across the country and even beyond, is that they're innovating in real time. I have immense respect for what they're doing right now because there's very little guidance. You know, the analogy I'm thinking about is that, you know, when the pandemic began and there was the transition to emergency remote teaching, faculty had to innovate in real time then as well. There was, you know, for faculty who had maybe spent decades teaching in person in a classroom, all of a sudden their classes were online and they had to figure it out with very little guidance. Now there's a lot of guidance even for faculty who may be in person, but, you know, want to have some kind of hybrid component or use digital course materials. You know, there's a lot more advice out there. Right now, there's the advice is, you know, it's you know, it coming from different sources. It's not, you know, there's no consensus. And so they're just working with their students in their classrooms, on the ground, real time, trying to figure it out. And I have enormous respect because it's definitely a moment to pay attention to. ChatGPT is a big deal.
It's interesting as you bring me back to spring of 2020 when we were all just like, good luck, that'll work out.
Exactly. I think in the future, I spoke with someone recently at the Association for Computing Machinery who was saying that they, you know, faculty can fully expect within a year or two, there probably will be more of a consensus about how to proceed. And there probably will be, you know, guides that are generally accepted. But right now, that's all being worked out. My sense is that, you know, faculty who are trying to work with and not against the technology are doing a great service to their students. It's not that these tools only exist in academic settings. They're going to be omnipresent in future workplaces. They're going to be embedded in search engines. They're going to be, you know, Microsoft has just invested in ChatGPT and expects to put it in its word processing software and sell the product to other companies. You know, there's going to be, you know, what Paul Fife at North Carolina State University calls synthetic disinformation in the wild. So, you know, these AI writing tools may be creating disinformation and spreading it very rapidly and helping students refine their awareness of the very subtle cues of what artificial prose may look like. You know, those students are going to be better equipped to face the challenges that not only, you know, challenge them in the workplace, but even in society.
As a final question, as you were talking about your own sort of academic background, you know, you come out of a math background. And I'm wondering, is this form of kind of linguistic AI simply the calculator, kind of the, you know, the humanities and social science calculator that math teachers K through 12 and higher ed had to deal with when technology really intervened in at least kind of the simple computational aspects of what was being taught in classrooms?
I think this is bigger than the calculator. Writing can be persuasive. It can be, you know, it's a form of communication that is different than what we do in math. And at its base, you know, a computation is either correct or incorrect. And, you know, even if you think, you know, that's the case in applied math, but even in pure math where we write theoretical proofs, they are either true or they're not. There's no gray area in a proof. If something is called a proof, it is true. An op-ed, for example, in a newspaper may have many truths, but it may also have spin. It may have some truths and some falsehoods. You know, so there's much more nuance when we think about human communication in language than when we think about the, you know, computations that a calculator can do. I think that the analogy works as a starting place, but I think that it's not complete.
Susan D'Agostino is technology and innovation reporter for Inside Higher Ed. Susan, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you so much, Melissa, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
We have to pause for a moment, but we'll be right back with more on how ChatGPT is influencing life outside the classroom after the break. This is The Takeaway.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
Hi, I'm Helga Davis. On my show, I speak with artists and thinkers about how to uncover the extraordinary in everyday life. People like musicians Brittany Howard and Sampha, Broadway director Whitney White, scholar Noli Way Rooks, and playwright Suzanne Laurie Parks. These are fearless conversations where we don't just meet each other, we meet ourselves. Join us. Listen to Helga wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Janae Pierre, sitting in for MHP.
Shall we play a game?
We've been hearing about how new innovations in artificial intelligence like ChatGPT are transforming learning inside classrooms. But some researchers are focused on how AI can transform learning outside the classroom, with the goal of informing policy changes and fostering more equitable outcomes for students. Melissa Harris-Perry spoke with Nabil Ghilani last week. He's an assistant professor of design and data analysis at Northeastern University and director of the Plural Connections Group.
A lot of the focus in how we do use AI in education is often in the classroom and looking at things like content mastery and test prep. But we know that a lot of children's educational and life outcomes are shaped by what happens even before they get to the classroom or what's happening in their broader schools and communities. And so our group is really interested in exploring some of those applications. You know, how can we use AI to help, in particular, foster more equitable network connections between students and mentors and between families and parents and other parents? Really, because we know from research that a lot of those cross-cutting network connections can have a dramatic impact on the trajectory and quality of lives of children and their families. One of the ways we've been exploring that is really when we look at this issue of school segregation. And so we continue to have very racially and demographically segregated schools across the U.S. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons we've seen is because of how certain school districts will determine student assignment policies to schools. So how do they determine which students are assigned to which schools? And one of the ways they do that is in how they draw attendance boundaries, or, you know, which basically how they determine which neighborhoods feed to which schools. And so that's actually been an interesting application of AI tools. We can actually use AI to simulate different kinds of assignment policies, different kinds of attendance boundaries, really to see which ones might foster more diverse and integrated schools, while also balancing and taking into account the constraints and preferences and other things that parents might have around travel times or other factors.
How might AI be connected to this notion of more integrated, less segregated schooling?
We are working with a couple of districts to apply some of these tools I mentioned to help support boundary planning efforts, really with this objective of fostering more diverse and integrated schools. So I think that's one application, is just helping districts simulate different policies. And when I say simulate, I mean just kind of try out quickly in a sandbox different policies, see what they think the impact of those policies might be on the demographic makeup of schools, on other outcomes that we might care about, and use it almost as a policy planning tool, right? Before you sort of go and roll out policies to the general public. I think another application that's actually really interesting and critical, of course, is you can't just make policies top down, right? You don't want to just take the boundaries an AI is suggesting and implement those, and that's the end of the day. You really want to create pathways for community members, and particularly those parents and community members that might not regularly participate in the feedback process, to be able to opine on and shape sort of how the AI is making these decisions, right? And have the AI really take seriously and into account what they're saying. And so that's something we're working on with some districts too, is how do we kind of create these collaborative human plus AI systems where the AI is doing what it's good at, which is, you know, looking through a bunch of different configurations, a bunch of data quickly, but then surfacing those as proposals to parents, who then have a chance to give feedback on those proposals, and then have the AI take that feedback into consideration as it sort of iterates and creates new policies. Something else we're doing is we're starting to use tools like GPT-3, which is the precursor to ChatGPT and some of these other language models, to try to help districts make sense of open-ended feedback. So parents submit hundreds of written responses to surveys, and it's just time-consuming to read through all of those. But if we can use some of these technologies to help do topic modeling and identify clusters and themes, that might at least support some of that work and make it more time efficient. So I think that's sort of one of the goals. But then, of course, you also want to make sure humans continue to be in the loop, because at the end of the day, these are social problems. These are human problems. And so we want to make sure that the technology is really supporting. But frankly, it's not good enough. And I don't think it will be good enough to ever replace some of these very political, very social, and very, very human tasks.
So much of how educators often experience sort of the point of what we're doing in classrooms is, you know, to develop frameworks and scaffolding for learning, and not just sort of filling in, do you now know this content? I'm wondering about the ways that AI may or may not move us more towards the structure building or more towards the fluency over content.
That's a great question. I mean, I think if our model for learning is really acquiring, you know, specific skills and that's learning, then I think we'll continue to probably design AIs. You know, every AI has an what's called an objective function. The objective function is really just the goal that it's given, right? The AI needs to optimize for something. And oftentimes when we design AI in education, we're the objective function is help the student get a higher score on the test or help them demonstrate that they know how to do X type of math problem better than they did before. You know, to the extent that we see that that is learning, I think we'll continue to design objective functions and AIs that try to optimize that. But I think if we see learning as a social process, if we see it as something that, you know, requires that scaffolding, often from whether it's a teacher or a mentor or, you know, a collection of advisors, whoever that is, then I think that can start to shift the paradigm in how we actually design these systems to support education. So I do think part of the reason we see so much of the AI on content mastery, which, by the way, there's no replacement for knowing things, right? I think it's really critical. It's the foundation, having those skills. But I think it is a limited view of what learning is, what the purpose of education is. And, you know, there's tremendous people working on AI and education. And I would love to see some of that talent and brain power go towards thinking about some of these more social, you know, scaffolding type of issues.
Do you have kind of a dreamscape, a vision of what AI could do?
Maybe it's a little cliche, but I think it's really, you know, untap human creativity, untap human potential. And I guess, again, from my viewpoint, really bring people together. You know, the reason we're so interested in this issue of segregation is because it's not only harmful in education, it's just harmful to society, right? Like we can't build a compassionate country, a compassionate world, if we're just from our earliest ages, not connected to, not learning from, not exposed to one another. And so it doesn't seem like a problem that AI is suited to solve. And I certainly don't think AI is going to solve it on its own. But I think to the extent we can deploy these tools to bring us closer together, really help us learn to be, really relish in the tension that comes from engaging with people and ideas that are different from us. I know these are all aspirational, but I do think there are ways that these emerging technologies can do that. And I guess my hope is to see kind of more explorations on that horizon.
Nabil Gilani is an assistant professor of design and data analysis at Northeastern University and director of the Plural Connections Group. Nabil, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.